I'm joined here today by Cathy Marcus, Global Chief Operating Officer for Prudential Real Estate Investors, Sherry Santos-Wiest, Principal Investment Officer for Real Estate at the Connecticut State Retirement and Trust Funds, and Sean Ruman, Director of Real Assets Research at NEPC. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I think it's fair to say that there has been unprecedented capital flows flowing into U.S. core real estate. Now, whether that's from domestic investors, foreign investors, or even new entrants into the space, we've seen eye-popping valuations, with many of the major markets actually going past their 2007 peak, which I think actually raises a very fundamental question, which is how do we actually execute on core strategies today without it actually being too risky? Now, I'd love to get your thoughts. Core has been a fantastic performer, but how do we actually view these rising valuations? Cathy, are you worried about the valuations that you're seeing within some of the core real estate?
I'm not worried about valuations within core real estate as long as your expectations are set appropriately, which is that where the valuations are with maybe a little bit of growth with income, that's probably where they're going to be. You know, you shouldn't expect the same sort of run-up that we've had. If you look at, you know, markers like, you know, spreads to treasuries or spreads to corporate bonds, you feel pretty good about where the valuations are, despite the fact that, you know, cap rates are pretty low and, you know, we are above or at peak in some markets. But overall, when you look at a lot of the metrics and you look at the fundamentals from a growth expectation perspective, from a supply perspective, and you look at leading indicators, you feel pretty good about growth over the next couple years. So as long as your mind is kind of set in terms of realistic expectations for what core will or how it may perform over the next couple years versus looking back 3 or 4 years, I think that people should feel pretty comfortable.
And Sherry, just give me your sense as an investor. Does it worry you about the pricing that you're seeing and particularly some of the cap rates that we're seeing for certain deals?
We execute our core strategy through two different venues. One is through open-ended core funds, and then the other is through our two separate accounts, where we are actually purchasing the properties using third-party managers, but being very, very involved in all the aspects of the purchase as well as financing of these properties. So on the open-ended core funds, I am not as concerned because even though some of my managers are actually purchasing with three handles on the cap rates, I also know that it's a much larger, blended, diversified portfolio, and some of the assets in those funds have been sitting there for 15 years and are picking up a lot of the slack from 3% going in cap rates of purchases today by appreciation from earlier cap, because they've been holding the assets for so long at such a low basis. So overall, the investments within those portfolios are a little bit less, that doesn't keep me up at night as much. Where I'm having some issues would be in our separate accounts, and I have had, you know, a lot of discussions about this with my managers, who are frustrated because they simply cannot execute the strategy because of the pricing in the market.
And Sean, are you sensing, you know, among the managed community that there is that frustration in terms of perhaps being able to get capital out and the competition in the market?
Certainly. You know, there's lots of capital in the space, and that makes it harder to find good deals. You know, I think we are certainly neutral on core real estate today in the U.S. So that definitely means we worry about it. On a relative basis, you know, I think it looks, there are a lot of positive things, as you mentioned. However, on an absolute basis, that's where we start to get nervous. You know, yields are generally pretty low relative to historical yields. You know, you look at REITs are trading at very high FFO multiples relative to historic basis. So that certainly makes us nervous. But then you look at other asset classes and everything's expensive.
I have been told that there is no such thing as an off-market core deal. Do you find that, is that the case today? Is there any such thing as an off-market core deal?
I don't even really know how people define off-market anymore, right? I mean, I don't know if you guys experienced this, but I think about 2 years ago, brokers started just always stamping draft on the OMs so that they could say it was off-market because an official OM had not been issued. So, you know, do I think that there are a lot of sellers out there who are not exposing, you know, their assets broadly? No, but I will say, you know, even just this week, I heard of two deals, actually, where they were doing a very limited market. marketing. Now, whether they really were, they were just trying to make me feel special. I don't really know, what that was. But people always have some reason. They have a tax reason. It's a closed-end fund with this last asset. There's often some reason why they want to do a more limited marketing. But you have to wonder, really, truly, why anyone would not expose an asset
broadly.
That's
such a conundrum. I really think that there is such a thing as an off-market core deal unless you're building it yourself, right? Right. So we do have some core managers who have absorbed development platforms and are building the core. That's the only off-market core that I can think of, unless
you've seen something else.
It's like an urban myth, urban legend.
There are previously marketed deals that may be off-market now. But yeah, I think there's probably, I wouldn't expect that there's a lot of truly off-market core deals.
So you're seeing core move into almost like the alternative real estate space?
A little bit. I mean, we did our first investment in self-storage in 2005. So that was a while ago. And at the time, the way we looked at self-storage was as a proxy for multifamily. We felt that it had a lot of the same risk characteristics as multifamily. But at that point, there was about a 200 basis point spread. Mm-hmm. There's still a spread, but it's certainly not 200 basis points right now. And, now, self-storage is so much more institutional than it had been. It's much more accepted as, a core from the way that the income, is. It's really, it's very typical.
In certain markets.
Exactly. Right. And you have, again, a lot of the characteristics, a very high percentage of your income, of your total return comes from income, very low capital that's required. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good example. We also invested in data centers. And again, to Sean's point, in NCREIF, they roll that into industrial. So it is kind of hard to say, because if you look at the Odyssey Index, I think it's still about 95% in the four major food groups, mm-hmm. right? And that's been about the same for a really, really long time. But I think it is because certain things like data centers get rolled into industrial, and you don't know exactly what's in all of those characterizations. Of course, retail, so many different kinds of retail that you can do under the umbrella of mm-hmm. retail.
Is that why we're seeing such great growth, particularly with some of the secondary markets? Well, I'll deem them secondary markets, but really kind of high growth markets, obviously STEM fueled, tech fueled, kind of someone described it as ex-urban core almost. Sherry, how do you view the opportunities geographically?
From a geographical standpoint, I would expect core to be located in the primary markets, and these would be the 7 to 8 different gateway cities in the United States. That said, these have the kind of locational qualities that reflect a high barrier to entry, high demand. Usually there's a correspondent high population and job growth factor with it. But that would not preclude those cousins to those urban markets.
Sean, let me bring you in here. If we just looked at perhaps global core, there are some U.S. investors who are looking at kind of core overseas. Do the yields make sense when you look at a London, a Tokyo, a Paris?
We tend to think not in general. If you think about what makes for a very good core investment, it's an attractive going-in yield and ideally high NOI growth. And so when you go outside of the U.S. to some of those markets, the going-in yield doesn't look particularly great. And then you have, in certain of those areas, demographic concerns. So I think a lot of our investors tend to focus more in the U.S. Just because of that.
I would say one thing people really focus on is leverage, right? Mm-hmm. Because that was a big lesson in the last downturn. And, not just leverage, but is it recourse or non-recourse? Mm-hmm. Is it fixed or floating? What are your maturities look like? There's just still, a tremendous amount of focus on debt. And I do think that people like Sherry, that is a big part of the, evaluating a manager is not just exactly what the leverage situation is, but how people think about leverage and whether it's kind of top of mind and they understand the risks there.
Sean, is it a case of asking much more questions today in order to get to that, how do we know? How do we really know how much risk you're taking in the market?
Yeah, I think it is a hard thing to truly get to. I'm a engineer by early schooling, and so is by definition, I like to collect lots of data. And collecting uniform data is hard to do. It's not an easy thing. So you'd like to start to underpin that risk analysis based on lots of data collection to understand, NOI, rent growth, occupancy trends across managers, digging down into particular MSAs, but it becomes harder to do.
Surely it becomes more qualitative rather than quantitative. There's a very subjective element in it today, I would argue.
Well, you have to overlay that. So it's not just, you know, you just can't collect a whole bunch of data, although I'd like to do that and come up with an answer. You have to overlay on top of that, trying to understand sort of the qualitative aspects of the portfolios and really try to get a sense of which managers are picking assets in spots that you think will have relatively outsized NOI growth. You know, going back to an earlier question of core, what defines it, where is it? You know, that does evolve over time. You know, I think if you went back 30, 40 years and looked at what the major core assets were in cities, those neighborhoods have changed over time. Mm-hmm. You know, San Francisco mm-hmm. is probably a good example. If you look at California Street, mm-hmm. you know, that at one point when, you know, was part of the Wall Street of the West mm-hmm. Or ran into it. Mm-hmm. Today, you know, the center of that city has evolved a bit. You know, similarly in Boston, mm-hmm. you know, if you went back, you know, our firm, when we were founded 30 years ago, we were based in Kendall Square mm-hmm. because that was a very cheap place to be. Mm-hmm. We were priced out of Kendall Square and moved into State Street in Boston because mm-hmm. that was going to be cheaper. So these markets evolve over time. And, you know, it's trying to find that manager that can pick spots mm-hmm. that are, again, going to have very stable, dependable income, but higher growth rates in rent. And that's where it becomes more art.
Or a longer runway on growth rates and rents, I think, is also another consideration, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where are we in the cycle? I know it's a question that kind of people hate in many ways, but where are we in the cycle, do you think?
So to use the Ken Rosen clock, mm-hmm. you know, apartments would be about 9:30 to 10 o'clock, and industrial and office would be somewhere in the 6 o'clock range. And I don't know. That's kind of the way that I view this spatial sort of, in a spatial sense, that's where it depends on the sector and also depends on the geography.
Technically, in our cycle watch, we're sort of at the end of recovery, but before expansion.
You know, I think we look for a lot of the same triggers, you know, some other specific things, certainly spreads to treasuries. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you look historically, and not that history will always repeat itself, but spread to treasuries, when that collapses, that's been a great foreshadower for problems ahead for core real estate returns. New construction, you know, you mentioned the architectural billing index, mm-hmm. things like that, you know, another sort of, at least historically, great predictor of future NOI growth has been new construction as a percentage of in-place construction. So are you getting to a point where there should be a lot of excess space that are going to drive down rents, drive down occupancies, and do you worry about the spread relative to treasuries that unwinds and it wipes out returns?